Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Here's a harsh reality. 85 million Americans don't have a retirement savings plan, and even those who do are not putting enough into them. Today, more than half of working people nearing retirement age won't have enough to maintain their standard of living. One economist hopes to change that. She's proposing a bold new plan. It's universal, and employers must contribute. This hour on Point, rethinking retirement with guaranteed retirement accounts. You can join us on air or online. Are you worried about saving enough for retirement? How are you saving now? A 401k? An IRA? Nothing at all? Join us at OnPointRadio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPointRadio. Joining me now from New York City is Teresa Geller-Ducci. She's a professor of economics and director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis at the New School for Social Research. She's the co-author with Tony James of Rescuing Retirement, a plan to guarantee retirement security for all Americans, which is out today. You can find an excerpt at our website, OnPointRadio.org. Teresa, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Oh, hi, Jane. Thanks for having me again.
Well, lots to consider in your book. First, help us understand the retirement savings picture out there. Looks bleak.
It does look bleak, but it's not too late to help save a lot of people. It looks bleak because while the baby boomers were working the last 40 years, we experimented with what Tony and I call a do-it-yourself system. About 40 years ago, we instituted a new kind of system where people would save on their own voluntarily. It was called the 401k system. Employers backed away from the pension systems that they did provide, and not all employers did. And the nation backed away from Social Security by putting in a slow moving decrease in Social Security benefits about 1980. So while the boomers were working and the our parents and grandparents were retired, things looked okay, but it was hiding the fact that this new 401k system, which and also behind that were employers withdrawing from contributing to retirement, and the government rejiggering Social Security so that it was less, that we were really waiting for this shoe to drop. So that's how we got into the system. We can talk about fixing it, or I can talk to you about what will happen in 10 years if we don't.
Well, let me first, I mean, I guess I would say financial experts recommend that you amass, what, 8 times your annual salary to retire in order to maintain your quality of life?
That's right. And if you're... And if you're a higher income worker, probably more. And if you're a poor worker, you need that amount just to, you know, stay in the game, you know, to have a socially acceptable amount of money.
So you open your book with this quote from Robert Hilton Smith, an economist who was first interviewed by PBS's Frontline in 2013. Here is Hilton Smith in his early 30s talking about retirement.
My retirement plan is fingers crossed and pray, basically. Yeah, win the lottery. Hope my dad has more money than he does. And the truth is, just gonna have to find a way to save way more than you should have to.
So fingers crossed and pray. A lot of people feel that way about their retirement plans. So the savings gap is widening. We get it. Tell us about your plan called Guaranteed Retirement Accounts.
Yeah, right. So, but let's go to where Robert was, because I'm pretty empathetic with him. He's right. He's saying, you're going to require me to save more than I possibly can. So what's good about what he said is that he's not blaming himself for eating too much avocado toast. Mm-hmm. You know, he understands as an economist that to ask ordinary people to voluntarily save 10% of their paycheck every week is just ignoring the way we have to live in this society.
Right.
So my plan is not a plan to kind of redesign humans, you know, to redesign their thought about avocado toast or their pulling up their socks and doing even more difficult things. It's just not realistic. to have people do it on their own. No country has ever had a successful retirement plan by that kind of a design, and our country fails when we ask groups of people to voluntarily go on their own. So the guaranteed retirement account puts everybody in the game. It requires workers to have some personal responsibility to save. It requires employers to help contribute to that retirement plan, like every other employer does in every rich country on the planet, and like every employer does in the United States for Social Security. And it requires the government to do a big rethink about how it distributes the big tax breaks that they give for retirement
plans. So let's break that down. Personal responsibility to save. How much would each person be responsible to contribute?
Right. So on the part of the individual, mm-hmm. We're going to require every worker to save 1.5% of their salary, unless they're in a defined benefit plan and already the employer is putting in about 5%.
And that amount is not typical. Flexible, 1.5%.
That's the minimum. But, oh, thank you for asking that, Jane. That's the floor. I would never be content with just saving 1.5%. From that floor, I would try to work it out that I could gradually or immediately save at least 5%. So a 1.5% floor. Now, I'm going to anticipate your next question. What about people who make below, let's say, $40,000 per year, which is the median household?
Right.
Well, even 1.5% would be tough for a lot of people,
right,
as you say, who are burdened by lots of other debt or expenses. So that's where the government comes in. Right now, the government does provide very generous tax breaks and subsidies for people saving for retirement. It just so happens, though, it's in the form of a subsidy that's in a deduction, which means most of it goes to the very top. So 70% of the tax breaks and subsidies from the government go to people who are in the top 20% of the income distribution. Without spending any more money at all from the federal government or the state government, we could redistribute that tax break into a refundable tax credit so that everybody who's saving that minimum, who are making below $40,000, would get their entire required contribution paid for with their refundable tax break. If mm-hmm. that was too complicated, I could break that down.
So give me one sentence what that means. If you below yeah. 40K,
the government would give you a refundable tax credit to pay for your minimum required contribution of 1.5%.
I see. And so then what is the employer's part of this? What does the employer contribute?
Yeah. Well, the employer contributes 1.5% of your pay into your account. So let's talk about this from the employer's point of view. Right now, employers are mandated, and they're not protesting it, to contribute 6.2% to your Social Security. They protested it in 1935, but they see that the Social Security contribution is a good deal. You know, 6.2%, and their workers are covered for disability, early death, and retirement. So employers are pretty satisfied with the Social Security system. We're asking that they just top that off with another 1.5%. And the only employers that would complain are the ones, we call them kind of bottom feeders, you know, the ones that are contributing anything at all. The other employers that are contributing 1.5% or even more will cheer, because this takes pension contributions out of competition. And so they won't be priced out by employers who don't provide it, you know, mm-hmm. undercutting mm-hmm. them with prices and other kinds of things.
So bottom line, the guaranteed retirement accounts don't replace Social Security. They supplement it.
They supplement. They're an add-on to Social Security.
So many people right now use 401ks. That's, you know, an instrument that many people have found to be convenient, easy. But you say contributions to 401k are not consistent. You say they are leaky. Talk about why they don't work and why your plan is better.
Yeah, so we had this design that was voluntary, right? That was a core principle that you're not going to force people beyond Social Security to save for their retirement, unless, of course, they're in a defined benefit system. which most public employees are, and some employees of big corporations are in. But never mind. The people who didn't have a pension, the country 40 years ago decided they won't be forced to save for their retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So with that decision, you had to make saving really attractive. You had to give them big tax breaks, the policymakers thought, and you had to let them take it out before retirement. We're the only country on the planet that gives a tax break for retirement savings, but let people take it out for almost any other reason. So that is not logical. And because people can drain their 401ks during their lifetime, we find that people, even though they have good intentions to save, do leak from, do draw money out of their 401k. And the people who do, it's not evenly distributed across the population. As you would expect, people in the bottom half, the people who really need to save for their retirement, are the ones that have more economic shocks in their life, a job change, a period of unemployment, a health shock, an education expense, or even a divorce. And so we have a system that's designed for the people who need the retirement savings the most are the ones most tempted and expected to take money out of their system.
There are emergencies, though, that come up, you know, and,
there
and
is.
When there's nothing else there,
yeah.
You go to where the money is.
Yeah, but that's the sad thing. If you're upper income, you have money under the mattress or, you know, stuck away in secret places. If you're like most people, you know, the bottom 60% or so, the only reserve you have is your 401k.
Hey, it's Ophira Eisenberg, host of Ask Me Another. We headed out to L.A. for two all-celebrity contestant shows, and the competition was more intense than the traffic on the 405. Linda Cardellini, Jeff Garland, Lance Reddick, and Paul Rust. Only one took home an Ask Me Another Rubik's Cube. Find Ask Me Another on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Odd Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about our nation's retirement crisis and what we can do to fix it this hour. You can join the conversation. Why is it still so hard for Americans to save for retirement? Do you see yourself working later because you can't afford to retire? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest today is Teresa Ghilarducci. She's co-author with Tony James of Rescuing Retirement, a plan to guarantee retirement security for all Americans, which is out today. So more than 30 million U.S. workers, Teresa, don't have access, as you know, to any retirement plan because a lot of small businesses just don't provide one. People are living longer, got fewer companies are covering retiree health care expenses. Here's Steve and Beth Bureau. They live in Chicago. A few years ago, they told the CBS Evening News that they put off retirement so they could pay for their youngest daughter's college tuition.
When we started realizing the little one was going to be going away to school, we knew it was going to be delayed.
I don't see it before 70, at least. I thought when I got a little bit older that we could travel or we could do other things, but right now all I'm looking at is working and making money.
So a lot of competing needs, I mean, from rising healthcare yeah. costs to student debt to, you know, parents yeah. who are helping with college tuition. I mean, there are a lot of people worried, and rightly so, about running out of money for their golden years.
Yep, that's not, they're not crazy. What makes me sad about that quote, Jane, is that we know a lot of people say, well, I'm going to solve this problem by just working longer. But it turns out it takes two for that to work. The employer wants to, an employer has to be there who wants to hire you, or your health has to stay good, or your partner has to stay well. So we find that even though people about those folks' age say the way they're going to solve their pressing needs is to work longer, is that over half of them find out that they can't work longer. Mm-hmm. So they may actually draw down their Social Security a little too early, or mortgage or go into debt. This is another issue we could talk about, but it makes really no sense. to mortgage your house or to borrow from your 401k or even borrow, this is going to sound harsh, to pay for your child's tuition. There are really good public schools that are, you know, a fraction of the cost of these private schools. And I, you know, I teach. I've always taught at expensive private schools. But I find that for a fraction of people really heading into retirement without enough money, a lot of it is because of this college debt for their kids.
A lot of listeners are interested here. To get in the conversation, let's go to Mike first in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Mike. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me.
You bet.
I was just calling in just to put my two cents in. I'll be 55 this year. I've worked since I was a teenager. And most, 75% of the places I've worked is...
Oh, dear. Mike, call us back. Are you there? Did we lose you?
Yeah.
You are.
I'm here.
Okay. Try again.
Yep. Sorry.
You'll be 55 this year. You haven't been able to save anything? What are you doing for retirement?
Nothing. I mean, I just figured I tell my kids I'm going to probably die at work because I just haven't made, you know, I've lived check to check my whole life.
Yeah.
And it's just, the money's just not there.
Yeah. And so, Teresa, what do you say to somebody like Mike?
Yeah. Hey, Mike, you're 55 and you're not too old. You probably won't die at work. There's going to be a point where you really can't find a job or your employer is going to squeeze you out. That's just the harsh reality. But at 55, you still have a lot you can do. So telling your kids, you know, not to expect, you know, much from you is a good start. But even if you started saving about 5% of your money in a place that's safe, and I can talk about that in a minute, and you really keep a monthly budget, you can keep your head above water and get some strength with a plan. Because right now you sound fatalistic. Social Security is your friend. It's a really important program. So no matter what kind of employers you've had, you've contributed to Social Security. And it's going to give you probably more than you think, especially if you can delay collecting past 62 all the way up to 66 if you can. So there are a lot of little steps that you can take that will make your future not as bleak as you just painted it.
Mike, thanks very much for the call. Teresa, I want to get another voice in here. We've talked about 401k plans. You talk about it a lot in your book. Joining me from the Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania, is Ted Benna. He's often called the father of the 401k, created the plan while at Johnson & Johnson in the late 1970s. He co-authored 401k for Dummies. Ted Benna, welcome back to On Point. So great to have you.
Hey, ladies. My pleasure.
Well, thank you for being here. So you created the 401k, which is now widely adopted as sort of the standard plan for retirement. Teresa's got a different idea. What do you think of the GRAs?
Well, first of all, yeah, I've known Teresa for quite a while, and I give her
Hi, Ted.
A lot of credit for coming forth with a program that, if it is enacted, would indeed do a lot to increase retirement security on the decades ahead. So, hey, Teresa,
hey.
Give you a credit.
Hey. Yeah,
not
thank
an
you.
Easy thing to do.
So, Ted,
and you too, Ted.
Well, you've been quoted, Ted, as saying that the 401k, with the 401k, you created a monster. What did you mean by that?
Gene, what I was really referring to there is not 401k itself, but the investment mechanism and how it's structured today, and it's become much too complicated and expensive, and you know that's really what I was talking about, having to turn totally upside down and redo.
So, what do you see the hurdles for a guaranteed retirement account? 1.5% every employee puts it in. Employer puts in money as well. Government comes in to help those below a certain income level. What are the hurdles here? Do you see any issues?
The first one I see is really being tough politically. I don't see the business community broadly embracing this. Teresa maybe had the opportunity to do some testing of it, and you know I haven't. But you know, I know an organization like NFIB, you know, the lobby group for small business, will be absolutely 100% dead against it.
Why, Ted? Why?
They don't like mandates. I mean, they don't even support a mandate requiring employers to offer payroll deduction plans. I mean, you know, mandating a plan that's going to require their members to contribute 1.5% of pay, they will absolutely dig in their heels and, you know, go down fighting. I'm not even sure the U.S. Chamber would get behind it. You know, it would be a mixed bag there. You know, a lot of your trade groups will oppose it. I mean, I see from my experience in working with employers a lot more opposition than support for the program.
Let me get David in here on this point in Dalesville, Alabama. David, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hi. A little background. I'm 60 years old. From my very first company, I did a 401k. When I left that one, I started an IRA, and in every subsequent company, I would use their 401k. When I'd leave them, I'd put that money in the IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm okay. I've never made more than about $65,000 to $70,000 a year. But my house is paid for, vehicle's paid for, no debt. And I'm opposed to this because I've actually wanted to comment because I've seen this coming for years. Back to, let's say, the early 2000s, everybody was saying, oh, man, you got to, they were having houses and boats and cars, and you got to equity in your house alone and get this. Get the stuff. I said, man, you don't mortgage your house where you live.
Mm-hmm.
And they all went down. They have to continue working, and now they have no savings because it all went bust. I, however, paid off my mortgage the month before the collapse came. So I'm really not that interested in supporting these people who didn't save when they could have. In that, I understand from the professor's point here is that she's going to, like, it sounds like you want to take away part of the subsidy I get for my 401k, you know, my deduction.
Well, let me jump in, David, and ask Teresa. So there's David.
Yeah, yeah.
He's lived frugally. House is paid for. He's saved. Doesn't want a mandated contribution that you're talking about.
Yeah. No, David, I so applaud you. My values are exactly where you are. And I'm 60 and I have exactly the same kind of profile you do. No debt. Always saved. This plan would have no effect on us. We get our employers to contribute because we, you know, trigger it when we joined our 401k. We get a good subsidy from the government, and we'll still get that. I'm talking about giving a refundable tax credit for people who make less than us, who contribute, and will get something from the government. Let me just tell you a story now. Your neighbor, who acts just like you but makes less, he has no debt, he works all the time, he saves the maximum, but he makes about $30,000. He gets nothing from the government. Someone who makes $200,000 and acts the same way gets over $7,000 from the government. So I just want to make that even so it's not a handout. I'm a huge believer in personal responsibility. I'm a huge believer in keeping that debt and living within your means. And this program, if anything, encourages that activity. We've always had our employers help us out, and we've always had the government help us out by our own behavior. I just don't want to pay for people like your neighbor's situation because we didn't force them to save. We'd be in really bad shape if they didn't have Social Security.
So, Ted Bennett, jump back in here. You're the father of the 401k. What would you say to David? I saved. I live frugally. I got my house paid for. All my friends are doing other stuff. But I don't want somebody telling me that I have to give when I don't want to.
Well, that's clearly is right. And, you know, that's going to be a big political hurdle with this plan because there are tons of Davids out there that are going to agree with him that say, hey, look, you know, we stepped up to the plate. We did what we had to do. And, you know, they're not going to have the kind of compassion that Teresa's talking about here for those who failed to do so.
Mm-hmm. So you never expected or intended for the 401k, Ted Bennett, to be a de facto retirement plan. Is that right?
Jane, it was it's a fluke politically, first of all, you know, without going into details. I mean, it was never intended to become the backbone of the private retirement system. And, you know, so Yeah, I mean, I wasn't involved in the legislation. I mean, you know, that has a whole history behind it. It's on my website if folks want to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
It was certainly not intended to be the key vehicle in the years ahead here for people in building their retirement income.
So how would you change the 401k program if you were to go back and do it again? Or what would you say to Teresa about what she's trying to do here?
I first of all, I'd respond to the point she made about leakage. I mean, clearly that's a major issue, and there's an easy fix to it. We just need a legislative change that says, hey, look, you can't take the money out when you change jobs or when your plan's terminated. You've got to keep it locked up for retirement. And, that's not a big deal. I mean, clearly it's a weakness of Social Security, or I'm sorry, of 401k that could be easily resolved legislatively. That's one issue. The other one in terms of, investment cost and complexity, that needs to continue to be hammered away on. I mean, I'm doing things myself, to try and help that initiative. But, many participants are just grossly overpaying what they should be
and
for investing in these plans.
And Teresa Gallarducci, to Ted Bennett's earlier point about, this is a politically dicey sort of issue in the business community, may have, real issues here. What's your response?
Ted, would you make the 401k mandatory now, given what you know now that employers walked away? Would you have everybody just modestly supplementing their Social Security with, let's say, 1.5% floor?
Hey, if I were a retirement czar, had the opportunity to do that, the answer probably would be yes, but it sure wouldn't be invested in government securities.
Me neither. No, I, okay. I agree. I agree.
And I know I would have a target on my back if I were the retirement czar and able to do that. Okay.
And that goes back to
Let me just say, making the comment I just made, I know I'm going to get some emails coming in and saying nasty things, making the comment.
Mm-hmm. But you might get some of the emails that I get, which is thanks for speaking up. So Jane, going back to your point about politics, I've tread on this. I approached this slowly over the past 30 years, watching what happened in all my work. And I've seen polls, opinion polls, for the past 15 years, and people are asked, Republicans and Democrats, hey, we got a problem with our retirement savings. Do you want a good pension? Everyone says yes. Do you want to have taxes to pay for it? They say no. Do you want to raise the retirement age? And they say no. So, okay, what about a mandatory savings, making you save every paycheck? And given that they can't have good pensions for free, they say, yeah, that's my best choice. I don't want to raise taxes. I don't want to cut benefits. Make me save. 75% approval for that option.
Hmm.
We did focus groups. It's in the book. We did focus groups of hundreds of people, and then 3,000 people we asked. Given our future going forward, what do you want? And a mandatory savings program are what people want. Then I surveyed employers, mostly big, not the small business community, but mostly big employers, and asked them, are you satisfied with the 401k system for your employees? And they say, no, even if we have a good one, they'll change jobs and they'll take money out and we can't do anything about it. And most of the employees that need to save don't save despite our best effort. Now, back to small employers, it turns out in California, when California passed its mandatory savings plan, the small business community was for it. But to Ted's point, in that plan, the California plan, employers weren't required to pay.
Hmm.
Some employers already do, and I don't want to hurt the ones that do because we let employers that don't get away with it.
Well, we are discussing 401ks, pension, and guaranteed retirement accounts. Ted Benna, the creator of the 401k, I really appreciate you being with us today. And thank you very much for your perspective on this and all things related to 401ks. I appreciate your time, Ted. Thanks.
All right, Jane.
Ever get to Friday, look back on the week, and say to yourself, what just happened? I'm Sam Sanders. Check out my podcast, It's Been a Minute, where every Friday we catch up on the news and the culture of the week and try to make sense of it all. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about how to save retirement, save for retirement before it's too late, and you can join the conversations. What questions do you have for Teresa Ghilarducci about retirement savings? What incentives do you need to sock away the money? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest today, Teresa Ghilarducci. She's director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis at the New School for Social Research. She's the co-author with Tony James of Rescuing Retirement, a plan to guarantee retirement security for all Americans. And that is out today. Here's Stephanie Tucker, a house cleaner in her 60s, talking to ABC Action News in Tampa, Florida a few years ago. She says she's never been able to save for retirement.
There is no savings. Get real. By the time you work and pay your utilities and food, you've got a nickel to $5 to put in savings.
And Mina and Angelo Mafucci are an elderly couple living in Southwest Florida. They lost their savings after Angelo was diagnosed with cancer and was not able to work to supplement their Social Security payments. They talked to the PBS NewsHour about how they lived before they eventually came to rely on the food pantry for groceries.
We opened up the closet, and all we had was coffee. So we made it, and that's what we had. And if we found a slice of toast or something, we had that too. Cereal once in a blue moon.
We didn't know where to go because we didn't have this ever had a problem like this before. And we hated to ask people for help or this or that, you know?
Let's get Sean in here from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a what I would say an elder millennial. I'm 33, 34. So I'm coming to that stage in my life where I have kids. We're buying a house. And this is really difficult to save with a 401k between student loan payments, mortgages, daycare expenses, which is up to over $1,000 for two kids.
Right.
And we live in a really small, modest home. Another recommendation I find is to put away 10, 15, 20%. But at the end of the day, it's just not there to even do that. So I'm all for personal responsibility, and that's why I really like this plan that's being offered. Just a little bit of help would go a long way.
Yeah. And how old are you, Sean, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 34.
34, okay. All right. Sean, thank you. Teresa, what'd you say to him?
Hey, Sean, I really hear you. 34 is young, and you're doing all good things. You're working and you're having children. Thank you. You also are contributing to your Social Security, and I hope your wife is as well. And you've also picked a modest house. You haven't over mortgaged. I hope you put about 20% down on your house. So it really is important to try to get that mortgage debt down. But the good news is that you're still young, and 10% is a lot at your age. If you just started putting down 2 to 5% very gradually in a way you never see it, then you would be on the path for an adequate supplement to Social Security. So I'm glad to hear you're thinking about it and you're only 34. So I recommend 2% next month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, find the pennies behind the couch. But I also recommend you do it in a way that you don't get fleeced by a high IRA. I would open an account with Vanguard at these low levels if you have anything, or start with just an index fund and then move it to Vanguard. Mm.
Sean, thank you for the call. Listening to Sean and your response to him, Teresa, I'm curious, you've been looking at these issues, studying this for many years. What's your sense about how young people, millennials, feel about saving versus spending?
Yeah, no, I think millennials are probably the most responsible and worried generation than we've seen. People in the in the Depression were worried, but that was because they were hit with a ton of bricks short term. But millennials have a long term perspectives. But we haven't done very well to the millennials. We loaded them with unprecedented levels of student debt and really high college cost. I don't think that's going to continue. I think people are going to demand that college is cheaper and go to cheaper colleges. But for millennials, they're worried. They think long term. I don't expect that they're going to to spend like boomers. Mm-hmm. You know that they. But also, you know, also it really depends upon whether or not you're high or low income, educated or not. It's not just age, of course. But college educated millennials are a lot more forward thinking than boomers were.
Here's Samantha on Twitter who asks, "I'm a 30-year-old self-employed graphic designer. Basic question." Who would facilitate the new retirement accounts for people like me who don't have an employer?
Yeah, it would be facilitated just like Social Security. Right now, you are your own employer, so you pay Social Security tax for your as an employee and the employer. You would do the same for your retirement account and what you do for your other kinds of insurance. So congratulations for being self-employed, but you would contribute as if you had an employer.
So it still works for people like Samantha.
Oh, yeah.
Here's Mark in Hamilton, Massachusetts. Hi, Mark. Welcome to On Point. Hi.
Hi, Jane. I worked for the government of Singapore many years ago, and investing retirement accounts. They had a great plan where everybody from the time they were starting job, paperboy, whatever, they lived off of 85% of their salary. 15% was put into an account, retirement in their name. Employers matched it 5-7 sometimes a little bit more percent based on industry, and so every year people banked between 20-25% of their salary. Imagine working 4 years and having a year of salary in your bank account. It built up such an incredible amount of reserves that it's now driving the Singaporean powerhouse. But what happens is people lived off the 85%. It was in their name. The assets were inheritable. So if someone passed away, just became to their kids and whoever their beneficiaries were. And it's a very, very powerful scheme. It can be phased in. I mean, all the pros and cons that are being discussed in the show are very appropriate. But it can be phased in. So over the course of a generation, it could be optional. So people become accustomed to having the forced savings, and over 15, 20 years, the power will be such that when people have a choice to opt into Social Security, they'll say, no, I'll take this other plan.
Interesting. Mark, thank you. So there's an example from Singapore. You talk about Australia, too, in your book, Teresa.
Yeah.
They have a program that's also quite effective.
Yeah, no, and Singapore and Australia were big inspirations. So were what the Dutch are doing. But also in our own in our own country, in our past, in my own experience, the principles are the same everywhere, which is early on, you just have a matter of practice that people save for their future consumption. I mean, every country has to deal with that, you know, how you shift resources from the present to the future. And our design, as Ted said, was a fluke. It was never meant to be a retirement system, or else we would have called it the Great American Retirement System, not 401k. So I'm not really, I think that Americans want to save. I don't think that Americans, we just talked about millennials, don't want to save. We don't have a savings problem. We have a savings plan design problem. So I want to say that the GRA might seem radical, but it's really taking the good pieces from our past and it's taking the good pieces from other countries.
Mark, thanks for the call. Here's John in Washington Courthouse, Ohio. Hi, John. I'm glad you called.
Hi, Jane. Listen, I was talking with my life insurance agent who, after consulting the actuary tables, let me know that my average life expectancy based on profession and family health history is probably around 68 years old. Is there even a point in me saving for retirement, considering it pretty much seems like I'm not going to live long enough to collect Social Security if they raise the age anymore?
What do you do, John?
I'm a commercial truck driver, and our industry has not increased pay to keep up with cost of living. I mean, Average industry-wide is about $37,000 a year.
Hey, John, do you have diabetes? Or are you doing everything you can to control it?
I'm doing the best I can to make sure that it never becomes a factor, but heart disease, diabetes, cancer run in my family pretty heavily. We're just looking at the situation where, you know, am I better off in a Roth IRA? Or am I better off in a traditional IRA? I mean, I think a Roth's probably a better way to go, but my real concern is I'm raising two kids as a single dad, and I really don't have the money to save, period.
John, thank you. Teresa, we keep hearing that over and over again, and it's a true issue.
It's true. And my plan is trying to fix that, John. So I like this idea of phasing today. In fact, we did. Tony and I did when the Congress was debating the tax bill. Today, we could help people like you by turning the deductible retirement savings deduction to a refundable tax credit overnight. That would have helped you. In Ohio, would do the same thing. We could put $100 could come from government, and you could be saving another $100. I think you're going to live longer than 68.
Well, talk about that a little bit, because, you know, the life expectancy and actually the magic number for retirement used to be 65, but, you know, you've studied this a long time. People staying in the workplace longer, that must be changing, isn't it?
A couple of things are changing. First of all, you don't get your full Social Security until you're 66. Second, John, I know this from all my studies, is that people are going to live longer than even the actuarial tables are telling you. He's looking. Your insurance agent is looking in the rearview mirror. No pun intended, because that's what you do all the time. Also, you are too by looking at your parents and grandparents. You just said you're taking care of your health as best you can. That's completely different from most people in the past. So I would count on living maybe another 5-10 years past that 68. But Jane, you asked me. Is everybody living longer? No. Most of the longevity gains have gone to people at the top of the income distribution.
Let me jump in here because I want to get some other calls in here and people are waiting. John, thank you. Let's go to Judith in Shrewsbury, Vermont. Judith, welcome to the program.
Hey. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I just want to put a plug in for 401ks. I'm 66, recently retired. I started the 401k 30 years ago. And the thing that got me to do it was my employer match. And it was 50% at the time. Another employer was 100%. And I always tell people, where can you make 50% on your money or 100% on your money? It just doesn't make sense not to, particularly if there is an employer matching.
So, Judith, does the GRA, the Guaranteed Retirement Account that Teresa's come up with, does it sound interesting to you? Would you rather have your 401k?
Well, I mean, at this point, the 401k is working. I don't know enough about the GRA, but it certainly sounds interesting, and sounds like she's put a lot of thought into it, and go for it. Yeah.
So, Judith, thank you. Teresa, what if people like their current savings options?
Oh, yeah, they can still have their 401k, absolutely, and I think people like Judith would welcome a little supplement. Judith is exactly the kind of person I'm thinking about when I designed the GRA. Start early, the employer matches. She probably invests it well. She probably didn't drain it. Those are exactly the kinds of design. She's adapted to the design. But I just want to make that design available for everybody. Look, she's lucky. Half of the employees don't even have a chance to save in a 401k.
Here's Joseph in Buffalo, New York. Hi, Joseph. I'm glad you waited, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking this. So I'm a millennial. I'm 32. Just married to a teacher in the state of New York. So she fortunately has a pension, but those pensions have been rolled back over the years. The other advantageous part of my life is I have been contributing 10% to my 401k since I was about 25, 6% prior to that, and I've rolled it over a bunch of times.
Oh, man.
Mostly that has just been because I have no idea what I'm going to need to retire, and there's such a lack of education I recently finally met with someone about my retirement, and it was kind of the three-headed approach to retirement. Social Security, maybe, a pension if you have one, and luckily my family situation is that we do, and then our 401k. But the fact is I just keep putting money into it, hoping that we'll get there. But I really have no idea what I'm going to need, and it scares me still, even though I'm giving a lot.
Joseph, thank you.
Joseph,
about 2 minutes left, Teresa.
Great to hear you. You're on track. You're saving 10%. Your wife's in a really good, strong teacher's pension in New York. For right now, you're good. Keep up the 10%. I'm worried about this investment advisor, though, I have to say. People like you are prime meat, you know, red meat. And so what I would do if I were you is take your anxiety that's and focus it on your investment choices. Only invest in index funds. And I would really look very carefully at Vanguard.
So, Teresa Ghilarducci, we've got about a minute left here. You've come up with this bold plan, these guaranteed retirement accounts. Might take a lot to get people to implement them. What would you say? What would the message be that you leave us with after this hour of explaining it and trying to help people understand where to go from here, those people who haven't saved, those folks who are struggling financially, maybe can't save? I mean, what's your final message for us?
Right. So I'm going to talk to the young folks who say they can't save. Really do save. Save at least 1%, 2% in some kind of segregated individual retirement account, but open an account at Vanguard. I keep on saying Vanguard, not because they pay me, but because they are a fiduciary for every account holder, and they have the lowest fees and the corporate responsibility because they're mutually owned by the account holders to put your best interests at heart. So I believe in that corporate design. For the middle income people, you don't have to save 10% to get ahead. To older people, you do have to reduce your spending. It's important to vote for Social Security. It will be there. And the Guaranteed Retirement Account is just helping everybody save for retirement.
GRAs, Guaranteed Retirement Accounts, will keep watching. Teresa Ghilarducci, thank you very much for coming on and explaining. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get our On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And keep following us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.